Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Welcome up, Big Station Jacks. Tom Howell. Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 21. As it Futures up 81. We're trying to make, we had three down days, but not really huge down days, but down days nonetheless. We're trying to come back from that. We should have Kevin and we should have Carl on this morning because we have no show on Friday. We can't stiff those two dudes. Do we have any? Who do we have with us? We have Kevin?
Oh, you got both of us, I believe.
Oh, cool.
We do.
So I'm reading this thing, so I'm a little foggy. I'm reading Carl's thing here on the bridge collapse thing. God, does that thing look huge next to that bridge, doesn't it?
You know, it's every conspiracy nut within 5,000 miles showed up on that thing.
Oh yeah, well they're out there.
I mean, what just astounds me is all these people that are opining that, you know, the navigation was hacked and, you know, whatever, right? The Chinese did it or whoever did it, all right?
It's those Chinese. They're sneaky dudes.
Oh, well, look, they are, okay? And and let's not mince words. These are not our friends, okay? And we should stop treating them like they are because they are definitely not. But first off, you have highly trained harbor pilots. These are people that run that channel every single day that, by regulation, are on those ships and take those things in. And if you've ever been on a cruise, actually, one of the things I really enjoy watching is when the ship gets out past the breakwater, there's a little speedboat. It's actually not that little, but, you know, a little speedboat by comparison to the size of this huge ship you're on. That comes out and takes that guy back off because he doesn't sail the rest of the itinerary. He's there to navigate the harbor.
How do they get him off?
They come along. That's why it's fun to watch. They come alongside and transfer the guy. All right, and sometimes it's not very calm. All right, because, you know, ships go when ships have to go. Right.
Yeah.
yeah. It's actually. It's a fairly interesting thing to watch. These guys do this every day. I used to own and operate a fairly decent sized boat, 45-foot Hatteras, and I could tell you right now, nobody runs an inlet or a harbor entrance or a channel on instrumentation. You just don't. These guys do this every day. It's well marked. They have visible buoys. It's not complicated, but you absolutely cannot screw up. And you have to have people on the wing bridges on a big ship like that because you can't see directly forward. So you have wings that come out on the side so you can see where you're going, both, you know, and also see behind you. Because the other thing is there's other traffic in there on a pretty frequent basis.
Okay? Yeah, well, they're gonna get out of that big boy's way, I would think.
Well, yes... because the law of gross displacement never gets repealed and you'll get crunched like a bug. But the fact of the matter is that you'll hang if you run somebody over and you're in the wrong, okay? And unlike driving your car, where if you get rear-ended, pretty much you're exonerated, right? You know, I mean, if somebody hits you from behind, it's not your fault, period, end of conversation. When it comes to a maritime collision... it is almost never the case that your responsibility is zero. Because there is a catch-all requirement in the coal regs, which is the operating regulations, that says if there's anything you can do to avoid a collision, you must do it. Even if you otherwise would have to violate all the other rules. Okay?
Yeah. So obey all the rules, but don't get hit.
Well, don't get hit and don't hit people. Okay, so the thing is that it's almost never the case that during an inquest of that kind, you're not going to get tagged. And as a result, you know, there's a great deal of attention paid. I mean, collisions of sea are serious stuff, all right? I mean, people die. So, but here's the other thing, too. These are all single-screw, huge vessels, okay? We're talking about 100,000 tons.
They don't have maneuvering thrusters?
Well, okay, so most of them do not. Cruise ships do, but those are only really useful when you are trying to get off a pier.
Or on a pier.
That's not how it works, Chief. The thing is when you're moving, okay, essentially all of the moment that you can impart to that vessel comes from your very back end. All right, because that's where the screw is.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that the normal rotation is what's called right hand. It's kind of arcane. It's how the prop turns when you're looking at it from the back. But what happens is that when you're going ahead, that imparts a little bit of a starboard movement to the stern of the ship. In other words, it tends to rotate you a little bit to port.
Well, that's how you park. You go backwards, it pulls in from the left.
Well,
when you park, when you dock.
And you know, if you have two screws, then you there's all kinds of cute stuff you can do. But the rudder at the back of the vessel has essentially no authority when the screw is not turning at reasonably slow speeds, okay? Because most of the turning capacity that rudder has at reasonably... this ship was running at 8 knots. It's out in open ocean. They're running at 20, 22, 23, all right? 8 knots is a decent turn of
speed. When the power conked off, is the current that strong? It got down to 6.7 when it hit. Is the current that strong?
I looked at the tide tables. There, it wasn't slack tide. It was still running. Okay, at that time. But the other thing is that the actual tide tables don't really tell you precisely what the running speed of the current will be at a given point in time. It's offset a little bit, and that's a local knowledge thing. You kind of have to know. All right. So this is one of the reasons they use those pilots, is that those guys run that thing every day. They know this stuff.
Well, how the thing be heading for halfway around the world and make it, you know, half a block off the dock and everything conks out?
Well, okay, so there are some reports that this ship has had electrical problems in the past. This is not the first time this has happened to it. Of course, not there, not, you know, as you're trying to leave port, right? But if you lose power, you're in serious trouble. All right, because yes, there are manual overrides. Okay, the engineer down in the engine room can control the power, and he can control the steering ram direction by hand. All right, I mean the engine, as long as the engine's running, you have hydraulics. All right, but losing electrical power is a serious problem, because how does a guy communicate with the captain up on top? Secondly, he's not expecting this, so he's not sitting there with his hands on the buttons, because normally that's not what you do. So there's a period of time, and it doesn't take very long, when Sir Isaac Newton is driving the boat, so to speak,
yeah.
Right? And you've lost. And the other thing is, since you're trying to cock a little bit to the port side because of the torque effect from the way the screw works when it's running ahead on a single screw boat, your rudder's set to there. If your power goes down and you can't move that rudder immediately, you're now going to start to swing to the starboard side. Your port's going to come out. If you then get power back and in your panic you go full reverse, and it looks like they might have done that. I can't really. I mean, you know, they've got black boxes. They'll do exactly what they did. They'll know. But at that point, you're actually going to make it worse, because when you put the engine into reverse, it tends to walk the stern to the port side, which, you know, pulls the bow to the starboard because it rotates.
Well, they had some dude on talking about how, I mean, that you should have some kind of a protective caisson around the bridge. I can't imagine how big the protective caisson would have to be to stop that thing.
Well, they put, so the Sunshine Skyway in Florida near Tampa was hit, 1980s, I think, was hit by a ship. And there were all kinds of rumors that the captain was, you know, the harbor pilot was drunk, he was stoned, he was whatever. He was ultimately exonerated. There was a severe storm that came through there and basically blew the vessel off course. It made it impossible for him to avoid the collision, okay? But he took one of the spans down into the water, and post that incident, and a couple of others, the design construction process now is exactly that. They have these things that they call them dolphins. It's basically huge caissons of stone and cement that are placed strategically in front of the pylons. And the idea being, now, whether or not they would have been effective to stop this, I don't know, all right? I mean, 100,000 tons at 8 knots is, oh, boy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I mean, you know, you can put defensive bollards up and stuff like this, but there's whether or not you're going to actually prevent this kind of a situation in that kind of a circumstance, I do. And then there's people running around saying, well, you know, they should have to run at lower speeds and, you know, things like this. And it's like, look, there are very good reasons, you know, that would, even when I, you know, my boat was only 45 feet and, you know, 25 gross tons. But if I'm clutching in and out at very low speed near a dock and I've got wind and current going, I'm not stable. My position and my ability to control that vessel, it gets real squirrely. And the reason is that a lot of my stability comes from the flow of the water over the keel and over the running gear.
Oh, sure. And, I mean, even I'm not a boat guy, but I know John had a, I don't know, maybe a 29-footer or something.
Yeah.
Maybe 32-footer, and you had the twin screws, and you steered by the screws. The rudder was useless unless you were actually going someplace.
Well, the thing is none of all these vessels are single screw. Okay, they're all single screw. So the kind of differential thrust thing that I could do and did around docks, you ain't doing.
No, that's what. But I was surprised
when
I
when you say single screw and double screw, what do you mean?
There's one propeller in the back,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Oh, okay. So when you're saying a screw, it's just a propeller.
Yes,
correct. Yeah, and the thing is, if I've got two, you know, like on my Sportfish, I had two engines and I had two screws. Okay, so I could put one in forward and one in reverse, and therefore I could impart a turning moment to the vessel.
You could turn it on a dime.
Actually, depending on the boat, mine was really good at, some are not, but mine was really good at, I could actually walk it sideways with essentially zero forward or reverse motion, which is a skill. And some vessels don't do it very well, but mine did, and I, you know, I could walk it on a sideways basis into as long as I wasn't dealing with, you know, wind and current at a, you know, at a highly disadvantageous thing. But that's always in the game, and so, you know, you have to. It's not as easy as it looks, but at the same time, you do have some limitations. And these things, you know, they push them out using a tug. Cruise ships don't typically have tugs. They're typically their thrusters are powerful enough to come off the pier, but a cruise ship, they will not dock in a place if the wind and the current are significantly adverse, because they can't get away from the pier and get enough way on to be maneuverable before potentially being forced back into the structure.
If you're in calm water, it's, well, we had a dinner on the Intercoastal. Your kind of place, Carl.
Yeah.
And these guys show up in like a 125-foot thing. It was huge. The only way they could turn it around is we had to do a three-point turn into like another intercoastal cutoff type of thing, right? But that guy, all he did, you know, was calm water in the intercoastal. All the dude did was slow down, and come up next to the dock, like 8 feet away, kick the maneuvering thrusters, and you move right up to the dock. It was easy peasy because it was called calm.
Yeah, well, he had them. I didn't have thrusters on mine.
Well, yours wasn't 125 feet either. This thing was huge.
Well, that's true, but believe me, you don't. I mean, yes, it makes it easier, but if you know what you're doing and you know how to handle these things, you actually don't need them.
Well, man, I know on John's, we went and practiced when he first got it. He goes, "What do you think we should do?" I said, "Hey, let's go down to where the buoys are and practice for a couple hours." And we both got pretty good at it. But one night, one engine didn't work, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's always fun.
We could not. You know, Diversey Harbor here, for those that don't know, you got to kind of come in from the south. You got to make a quick left turn. You got to go underneath the bridge. Well, we came in like really slow. And we had a wave people in front that were fishing and get the hook out there and push us off from the side to get into the harbor. There's no way you could turn. One wasn't working, and the rudder at 1 mile an hour was useless.
Well, I'm just saying, if you practice, yes, you can.
Well, we didn't practice that. Because all you had to do otherwise is put the other one in reverse, and you made the left turn, and then you went, you know.
Right, that's one of the things that, that I spent some time with when I got the boat, and I did with my little. I had a smaller vessel too, and the inboard ones, like I had with Gigabyte, are considerably easier than a twin outboard because with twin outboards the engines are behind the stern, the thrust point is behind the stern, and they don't rotate nearly as well.
Well, those IOs turn pretty good. The ones where the whole thing turns.
Yeah, the IOs aren't too bad, except the IOs are not independently controllable, and so other than forward or astern. But yeah, I mean, there's the pivot point on an IO or an outboard is in a different place, and it actually makes it more complicated, more difficult to control. So, but I just looked at all this, and I'm like, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, okay, they got once the power went off. And it was off long enough for them, they have to go to manual controls, with a guy on the telephone. All right, full ahead, left rudder, right rudder, right rudder. Once they got there in close quarters, they were in serious trouble.
When we come back from break, Kevin, we're going to talk about what has to happen. For some reason, if you look at the total tonnage, the Baltimore thing is pretty big. It's like, the fifth or sixth biggest. But actually, for some reason, they do 90% of all the cars in and out?
That's one area of specialty for them. Yeah.
No, where they have, I've never even seen a picture. They say they've got the roll off docks, roll off, roll on. What are those? I mean, are those designed to drive cars on and off the ship? I guess must be, huh?
Vehicles. Yeah, that's what that's about. It's there's the impact on this is going to be pretty significant, and of course nobody's going in or out of there until they get the wreckage out of the water.
Is that water deep enough to just let it drop, or no?
That's the other thing, is that I looked at the chart. The depth under keel there is about 60 feet, and that is actually the minimum for an ocean-going channel. So they can't leave any of it there. They got to go get it all out of the water.
Because that was one of the big... God, Kevin, we talked about this years and years ago. We talked about when they built the Golden Gate Bridge. One of the big concerns from the Navy was that if somebody were to shoot the bridge, how are you going to get in and out of the place? And the story was that it's deep enough there, you just cut it off and let it drop. But
not there. It's you have to have. That was one of the things when they put the Oriskany down, intentional artificial reef, was that the top of the superstructure after it was sunk had to be at least 60 feet down, and that's the reason, is because there are people that navigate through there, and you don't know how. What their draft is, and hitting underwater obstructions is bad.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures 84. Come back. We're going to have Kevin exonerate us, teach us how the hell everybody's scurrying around now trying to find other ports, other railroad spots to go, how to get it on. What do you guys figure the over-under on this bridge replacement? I'm going to say 10 years in today's world.
Oh, God, it should, by the way, of course, Biden has now said the federal government's going to pay for it, even though clearly the federal government had absolutely nothing to do with the collapse. I mean, it's not like it just fell apart. It was hit. By the way, admiralty law gives you an awful lot in the way of recourse if you use it. So, Yeah, you know, those guys, remember whenever Garden went aground the Suez?
Yeah.
Those guys got a digital exam in terms of having to pay for, you know, the damage.
Well,
they
the delivery here, and this is Kevin's area, the delivery is terrible. Maybe people don't understand it like you guys do, a lot of our listeners do, but if it was me, I would come out and say, this is a terrible tragedy, blah, blah, blah. And obviously there's people at fault. This is going to be in the courts for a while, but we're not going to wait for that. We're going to front the money to get it going from the federal side, and then when it's all figured out, if anybody's at fault or whatever the damages are, we're not going to...
Chief, it's even better. Under Admiralty law, the United States can arrest that vessel, including all of its cargo, and seize it until those procedures are completed.
Yeah, but we're not going to do that because the right guy's stuff is right there.
Well, we blankety-blank well should do that. They certainly did in the Suez.
Yeah, well, we're not the Suez. S&P futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 83. We have to see who's involved. If it's the right people, Carl, we can't do anything like that. You know that. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jack.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 82. We're up yesterday in the morning, and then we closed low. We'll see if we hang in there today. Big move yesterday. Yesterday, I think I was talking, I mentioned on the air that UPS was up $5, and it was trading, I believe, 162-ish. Well, whatever the guy said, or whatever the report was, it turned around. The stock was down like 12. It's trading 144, so it's down damn near $20 from its top yesterday morning, which is really kind of scary. It started talking about revenue going forward. At first, it was really a good number, and then all of a sudden, people decided it wasn't such a good number. Dow futures are up 173. Individual stocks in the Dow moving up here. I've got Merck up 576. That's a big move for drug company Merck. CRM Salesforce up $1.35. Pretty much everybody's in the green here. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 77.4%. The FTSE down 22.3%. CAC around up 17.2%. So mixed, but probably to the upside if you had to summarize it. Nikkei up 364.9%, 40,762, as the yen hits a 34-year low, so that's interesting. A Hang Seng down 225, 1.4%, still over 16,000, 16,392. Shanghai down 38, that's 1.3%. Under 3,000 again, 29.93. Let's just say that the Japanese attempt to pump their market up has been doing a lot better than the Chinese attempt. Yesterday, like I say, the Dow finished down 31, S&P down 15, Nasdaq down 68. Not much, but it looked like we were going to do an update yesterday, and then we didn't. 10-year down 1 basis point, 4.22. The Bund down 4, 2.31. Japan down 2.72. Oil, down a little bit today, but still over 81. 81.13, down 49 cents. Brent down 55 cents, 85.70. Natural gas down 3 cents, 175. Arbob unchanged at 269. Foreign exchange, euro, same, 108. British pound, kind of the same, 126.5. We've got gold, which has been trying to rally over 2,200, trying again today, 2,216, because it ducked back under as the day went on yesterday. Silver up a dime, 2,472. We have Bitcoin up 537, back over 70,000, 70,279. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, crummy weather, windy as hell. What do you got?
It is 6:39 here in Chicago on Wednesday, March 27th. Starting off with a little bit of sports here. Coming up on Thursday, tomorrow, we do have some opening games. The White Sox are going to be playing the Tigers, and that'll be here in Chicago. And the Cubs will be playing the...
Texas Rangers.
There we go, Texas Rangers. And they'll be playing that over in Texas. Now over to Chicago weather. We are currently at 26 degrees. We have cloudy skies, and they're going to stick around nearly all day, it looks like. We're going to have a high of 44, and that's going to hit around 4 p.m. Thankfully, looks like little to no chances to rain throughout the day. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 48 degrees. They got clear skies. They're going to have a high of 74. That's going to hit around 5 p.m. And they're going to have a very, very slight chance of rain reaching a height of about 12% around 6 p.m. Now, finally, for some Chicago traffic. Looks like only one major thing to take note of. It is the exit ramp is closed due to an accident. That is at, let's see, Eisenhower West at I-88. Let's see, that is backed up to Des Plaines Avenue. Expect delays up to 1 hour over there. That is probably the most I've ever seen in a single accident.
Yeah, they had a big accident earlier with ambulances and everything.
Yeah. But other than that, if you're on the inbound Kennedy, there is some congestion over there. But things are looking pretty clear otherwise. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
So, Kevin, the logistics of this, are they going to, first of all, I guess I'll ask Carl, is there any other way out of that port, or is it got to be through that river? Is that the entire Baltimore port, or is there another side that you get in and out?
Yeah, no, that's it. I took a look at the chart. Nautical charts are pretty easy to find even online. I don't happen to have a detailed chart book for that area, but I have the base stuff. Still got some of that from when I had the electronics on the boat and some paper. And so, yeah, anybody that's in there right now is trapped, and anybody that wants in there ain't going in. Now there are dockage basins in the area. So, if you're coming in, you're not stuck with sitting out at sea. Although, most uh, In most conditions, that's probably preferable to being, being in one of the basins. But it depends on what you have. It depends on how much room you've got, how many other ships are going to sit, where they're going to sit. Can they divert? Not a pleasant situation though for anybody that's especially if you're in there, because you're not going anywhere until they get that wreckage out of the way.
Well, so Kevin, what major would I have wanted to take to be hired for this right away?
Well, you'd want to be a logistics manager if you wanted to fix things. What's interesting coincidence is that we offer a class called crisis management. I happen to be the guest speaker for the crisis management class tonight. What I do and my message to them is how to go about doing risk assessment. And I have a number of risk assessment exercises, big and small. What do you do if there's, like your ERP server is down or your database server is down? What do you do, how do you do, what's the likelihood? What kind of plans do you make, et cetera? And risk assessment is just a very, very tedious effort that you have to do, and you have to do it thoroughly. So I have since added, let's do some risk assessment and immediate concerns around, a disastrous cargo ship accident at the port of Baltimore.
Yeah, well, you got one right in front of your face.
What are you going to do if you're a traffic planner? Because you're going to lose I-5. And what are you going to do if you're at the ports of Boston, Charlotte, Jacksonville, et cetera, on the East Coast? Because all of a sudden, you're gonna have traffic diverted your way. And what if you're Carnival Cruise Lines, who operates out of Baltimore? And what if you are the logistics manager for Ford? And what are you going to do if maybe you're the logistics manager for Fresh Time? Has stores up and down the East Coast and specializes in fresh produce, and now I-5 is closed. You've got a lot of thought process for this, and we could sit here and just brainstorm the impacts of this for the next half hour and still not come close to assessing everything. This is going to be very disruptive for a while.
Yeah, you think that, well, we got a whole bunch of parts, but it's not that easy. I mean, it's surely not that easy.
Stop calling me Shirley for
yeah,
starters.
Yeah, don't call me Shirley.
The ports on the East Coast, as you go up and down the coast, just the ones on the East Coast of the United States: Miami, Everglades, Palm Beach, Jacksonville, Savannah, Charleston, Wilmington, Port of Virginia, and there are several terminals there, Port of Baltimore, Port of Wilmington, Chester, Philadelphia, et cetera. So all of those are now going to have an impact. And so that's going to be an important part of it.
What do you suppose is happening? What's the fastest? And I'm talking about the old days, like I always seem to, but how quick can you get a bridge up? I mean, by the time I'm going to guess, Carl, that they're going to want the span in this, the new bridge, to be way wider than the span in this bridge.
This thing dates to the 1970s, okay?
Which means it's really not that old as bridges go.
No,
but the standards have changed in terms of, impact protection, things like that. The other thing is the ships have gotten larger, a lot larger. And so, 100,000 gross tons they weren't that big when this thing was built. So the guys that were doing the engineering, it's just a simple matter of, hey, guess what? We think a freighter is this, and now the freighter is 5X, okay, in terms of displacement. Well, if it hits you, it's going to do a whole lot more damage, right? So... yeah, things will have to be rebuilt to so-called modern standards. But the other thing is that all of the terrible stuff that goes on in America when we try to do infrastructure, you want to build a nuclear power plant. Well, it takes 4 years to build the power plant. It takes 30 years to get all the environmental weenies to shut the F up or sue them out of existence before you can put the first stone down. And you're going to have the same kind of thing happen here, I guarantee it. And on top of that, all the corruption that is always present in large public works projects is going to show up. It's a, you know, it's a, why
it's
is
already there well into its plan, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I know. I mean, you know, Chief, come on. You know, you see this all the time. How long did it take to redo the burn interchange?
Oh, 9 years.
Well, yeah. Explain to me why that wasn't done in one, you know, one season.
Well, when you work 8 hours a day with 15 people, that's a problem.
Well, yeah, okay. So, you know, never mind. Oh, you know, hey, we got a cost overrun here. We got a cost overrun there. You know, I drove through that a couple of times during the time that was all tore up, and I'm like, you know, I was here a year and a half ago. How come they haven't made any apparent progress?
Well, they just almost finished the LaGrange Bridge, which is a redo. So, I mean, they didn't have to tear anybody to the bottom out. I'm sure they had some fixing to do, but it's been 4 years, and they just did one half. So it's maybe a mile and a half long.
Yeah, it's utterly ridiculous.
They never worked a second shift, never worked, maybe once in a while worked on Saturday. There were days where I could count three people there. Can you build a bridge from home during COVID?
Well, you know, there's always that problem, and that's going to be you know, a huge part of it. And on top of that being that this is, you know, now Biden is, oh, this is, you know, this is a serious federal issue. We have to take care of this at the federal side.
Well, but I mean, you're gonna end up with a higher bridge, a wider span. If you could get the caissons out of the water at all, you will. But I don't think you can. It's probably too far. But I mean, look at the Golden Gate. I mean, the thing is, the Navy was all over that one. But Dr. J told me that he was out there that when the Enterprise went through. The Enterprise, I think, still was the tallest aircraft carrier. But he said they had to take the mast down to get under it.
Yeah, I don't know that they need more clearance. My understanding is that the deck was about 100 feet off water. So, I mean, that's, of course, as soon as I heard that, I'm like, well,
what do you figure the Golden Gate is? It's got to be higher than that.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm like, you know,
I biked across it. It was high. It was real high. Yeah. I couldn't wait to get over the darn thing.
Well, I mean, I've driven over the Mac a whole bunch of times.
There
are legitimate things that are going to be improved because the engineering standards have changed. Okay, especially having to do with impact protection. And when they rebuilt the Sunshine Skyway, they did that. But the reality of it is that anybody that thinks, you know, getting the debris out of the way is not really all that tough. The water there is 60 feet deep. Okay, which is not hideously bad in terms of depth. It's black water, it's swift water because you've got a decent tidal range there. It's not huge, but you've got some, and so you got swift currents. But they'll getting the crane equipment in there and everything else, and you know, and the guys that can cut the steel underwater so into pieces that are, you know, small enough that they can hoist them and get them out of there. That is going to take quite a bit of work.
Well, what percentage of the bridge is down? Like two thirds, or?
Well, the entire overwater span
is down.
Because
if you saw the video of it, it just was a chain of, you know, cascading effect.
Well, you had the first end failed. The problem is you transfer all the static loads to the remaining piece, which that's way beyond design limits, and down it goes. Yeah,
that's I bet they still go wider and higher. My guess would be.
I don't know. You know, the thing is it's not. Here's the thing. That's primarily a hazmat and traffic relief thing. There are multiple other paths into and around there. So from a surface transportation standpoint, it's going to be highly disruptive simply because it takes some of the capacity out of the system, right? But in terms of actually, you know, like blockading in the area, no, not at all. I mean, is it going to be a nightmare traffic-wise? And yeah, it is. But, you know, c'est la vie on that. The real problem is that it basically shuts the port down until they can get it
cleared. It's not like if you knocked out one of the bridges going to Staten Island, like you can't get to Staten Island.
Right, it's not anything like that at all. You've got multiple tunnels that run underneath there, and then on top of that, you can go around the outside.
I think when I went through there, I think I did the tunnel.
Yeah, so there's, I mean, The bridge, the primary thing with the bridge for commercial traffic getting into there is that the tunnels are placarded banned for hazmat material, because obviously if you have a, you know, if you have a fire, you know, on a tanker in one of those tunnels, oh God.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So.
I love the tunnels in New York, and for some reason they mostly were all ladies. But I used to take the bus from Newark. They had these big buses, and these ladies were so calm driving these buses right next to each other in the tunnel. The tunnels are not that wide. At least the Lincoln Tunnel wasn't. Is that the first one? I think it might have been the first. I'm not sure what the first one was, Lincoln or Helen. Their mirrors would be like 3 inches apart, and they wouldn't even flinch. I'm sitting
there. Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of, you know, it's like one of the things that I've pointed out, tried to point out to people, and, you know, the various crazed screaming that's going on about this, is the guys that were on board that were actually, you know, the river pilots, the harbor pilot guys, those guys run this thing, you know, literally every day, okay? They are, it's like me coming into Destin when I had Gigabyte. I know where the channel is. I line up on it visually. I don't use any instruments. I don't need it. If the weather's really terrible, then yeah, okay, you know, the radar's going, and you know, but even so, I'm navigating that thing visually, and I'm cool as a cucumber because I run this thing all the time, a couple times a week. Okay, now I'm not doing it commercially. The guy that's going out there, that's taking charter people out to do fishing, or is running this thing commercially, he's, you know, maybe he's, you know, he's a pilot for a work crew that's going out to the rigs or whatever. Those guys, or the Coasties, there's a Coast Guard station right there. Those guys are in and out of that thing, you know, 2-3 times a day. It's kind of like...
There was no chance of a Mayday, eight tugs being able to get there fast enough to get it in the middle. There's nothing like that.
Oh, no chance. No, and now one of the things that you're going to hear people talk about is that they shouldn't allow... unescorted, you know, basically shouldn't allow a single screw vessel under its own power without, you know, a couple of tugs on it going through there. I don't think you're going to see that sort of change proposed or made, and one of the reasons is the economic impact. Could a couple of tugs run that thing through the inlet at the 7 or 8 knots that it was making? Yeah. But that channel actually can accept 2 vessels, 1 upbound, 1 downbound. It's got enough room for that. If you stick tugs on each side, does it still have, I don't know. I mean, now we start to get into the logistics of this, and, you know, yeah. Not to mention the cost issues, but leave the cost issues out of it. Just the logistics issues and the impact on harbor traffic, I think, might be extreme enough that the people just say, no, we're not going to do that.
Well, we got a couple minutes left. We got to get Kevin. What's the NCAA? We don't have a show Friday, so we're squeezing here. What's going on NCAA? Are we going to get some good games this round, or the second round? Not so many.
No, and that's typical of the second round. It starts to get chalky. I think there's still some room for good games, because now we're starting to get down to just good teams. So you better play well if you want to win. You're trying to win 6 in a row playing all good teams. That's not easy.
No.
It's not easy no matter how good your team is.
Everybody here seems to have centered in on Purdue. I don't know about that.
Well, I think Purdue's very good. They have, they've got Lurch in the middle. I think most people look at him and say, well, he's good because he's big. And yes, he is good because he's very—he's the largest person on the court. But he's also very skilled, and
he's got great hands.
He kicks back out very well, and Purdue's, you know, got shooters that they didn't have before. So, I'm tending to think, you know, Purdue is in pretty good shape for this, but they're going to have to beat some other really good teams along the way.
What do you got? Who else you got up there? By the way, nobody's, even you, Carl, no, everybody's bracket, evidently, in the Warren Buffett pool is already busted.
Well, you know what? I don't even bother with that stuff. It's not important enough to me to put the effort into it.
Well, I'm just horrible at it, so what's the point?
See, I picked, Carl, I picked for the Buffett pool because my cousin works for a Berkshire Hathaway company. And he doesn't follow college basketball at all, so he has me pick it. And, you know, the only issue is whether I'm texting him at about 2 o'clock on the first day or 6 o'clock on the first day saying, well, it was fun while it lasted.
Well, there you go.
Because and this year, I'm sure there are no perfect brackets. I mean, he's never had to pay off on the million a year, but
it never will.
But my deal with my cousin is we'll split it if blind squirrel theory holds up someday.
Well, what happened was it a few years ago, Kevin? I think you were on. Matty Weber was doing the producing. He said it was the worst day ever for casinos. Because the first time ever, the entire left side of the parlay card hit. His favorites all won. And some people just pick the left or the right side. They don't even go through it. They just like all favorites, or they like all. And evidently, the whole left side won. And these are gimmick bets, so you can't, can't lay it off against another casino or another bettor. But hey, real quick, we got a couple minutes. We can run over a couple minutes. Russell's probably already on. But what do you make of this? Kevin, you and I, more so than with Carl, because we were talking more about labor and stuff. What do you think of this guy in Toronto with the cheating thing?
Oh, that's weird. Share the story with the listeners.
I read the other day that, I mean, Carl, we talked about it a little bit, saying that when you start getting all these gimmick bets, I mean, everybody, when you talk about point shaving, you're talking about the Black Sox, you know, where you throw the game
right,
or something like that. Well, when you got all these gimmick bets, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, if your team, for a team, for instance, you could be a 10-point favorite on the game, okay, but then you could be up 30 at half. So then there's halftime bets where you might be a 5-point dog figuring you're going to put the reserves in or something. You can monkey with the second half piece if you want and win or lose that piece even though you don't monkey with the game bet. Well, now they have these prop bets on individual people to the point where my joke is, if I'm pitching for the Cubs or somebody, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody bets on whether the next pitch is going to be a strike or a ball, and I got the schmuck, you know, 0-2 already, and somebody flashes me that, I can throw a ball probably and still figure I can strike him out. I mean, when you start getting down to that nitty-gritty and individual, that's what happened to this guy, allegedly. And one game in January and one in March last year, he had personal, I mean, he must be pretty good, but he had personal bets for rebounds, assists, and points. In one game, he's like 4 minutes into the game, and he said he had a reoccurrence of an eye injury and took himself out. And then like 2 months later, but the weird part is, and of course, the feds, is, you know, the both of us, the feds are now talking about regulation. Well, evidently, the gamblers picked it up instantly. That all of a sudden, and it wasn't him doing the betting. This is the thing. He must have owed somebody money and said, I'll do this for you. All of a sudden, the gamblers see an unusual amount of betting on this guy to not get whatever the line was for points, rebounds, and assists. And so they noticed it instantly. So when it happened again, they were kind of ready for it. And that's what brought it up, I think, to the NBA, where the gamblers themselves, and now everybody's saying, geez, you need regulation. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, but I'm saying that he took himself out of the game before he could make whatever his personal prop bets were on two occasions, one in January and one in March.
You know, I have to chime in on this one because I've taught my daughters a lot of lessons in life, and one is that you can get away with anything once. And if this guy had just done it once instead of twice,
yep,
we wouldn't be talking about it.
Probably.
There's a lesson for the kids this morning.
There it is. And, you know, Russell, I used to tell my kids all the time that whenever I catch you doing something, don't even bother trying to tell me that this was the first time you did it.
Exactly.
Because I'm assuming it's not, and you've been doing it for a while, whatever it is, and if you just happen to get caught on the first time, geez, you are the unluckiest SOB going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Real quick story before we let these two get. One of the schools I worked in, South Shore, the engineer is this, he must have played college ball somewhere, real nice guy, but this black dude, very, very athletic, Ellie Walker was his name, one of the nice guys I ever met. He was telling me one day about he was having problems with his son. the son's a teenager. And he goes, you know, he's pulling all this crap. He thinks he's real slick. He goes, but I'm really worried about him. And I go, why? And he goes, because he's so bad at it. He shows no imagination. He's horrible at it. He goes, I was much better. I actually put one over on the old man a few times. This kid doesn't have a chance. He goes, he must be some dummy. He's talking about his kid. He's so bad at it, I'm worried about him. How bad is that, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, out of my kids, the one that always got caught and that was bad at it was my son. He'd get caught, and my daughter was sneaky.
God. Kevin, Carl, thank you, guys. I'm going to miss our Friday show. There's no labor numbers, but there's a bunch of economic numbers coming out, which I guess we'll have to talk about on Monday. But thank you, guys. And, Carl, thanks for the stuff on the bridge. I mean, I was reading some of it as usual. You're ahead of me on this. I just hope it's not 10 years. But there's no way to put a temporary one there, is there? I mean, there's just...
Well, you conceivably could. The problem is you need the height, because a bridge that just gets land traffic across actually screws you.
Yeah.
you need to be high enough that the ships can get under it.
Well, I'll bet they get the stuff cleared away in a month, so the shipping will be okay. Just what do you do about the traffic?
Right. I mean, getting the debris out of the waterway is especially, I mean, now if this happened in October, it would be an entirely different game, because, you know, now you're coming into the nastier weather, right? You know, that would extend things considerably, but we're coming into nicer weather. So my guess is that by the end of April, you know, you're going to start to, they're going to be able to at least open one lane of that, and probably shortly after that, they'll have the fairway clear.
Well, you guys have a nice weekend. We're going to go for like a 2-second break and be right back with Russell. SP Futures up 18, NASDAQ Futures up 68.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We're on the board. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 69. We're trying to make another run at a up day here after three in a row down. Not horribly down, but three in a row down. And yesterday we tried to do that, and all of a sudden the market kind of turned slowly. Russell, what, seeing some of these moves in these stocks, I mean, yesterday I just happened to watch, well, not just watch, I have a lot of overweighted people in UPS, because for those that don't know, UPS is really big, and you're if you work there for years and years and years, you build up huge quantities of UPS stock.
And, they're guys that work what we would consider the blue collar kind of jobs at UPS for, you know, their whole career, and they retire with like $2-3 million,
yeah.
$2-4 million. I know a guy
that's a little high. The number's more like 1.5-2. But yeah,
I know a guy that he claimed. He had $4 million after driving for him for a long, 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 long time, which he got really upset when I said, you know, you should diversify a bit around that one, but more power to him.
Well, so, you know, it might be that number.
There are a lot of people that have, you know, they're worth that worked for that company, worked for Brown, and have made a lot of green from Brown for sure.
You know what? I'm going to say you're probably right, because when I get a bunch of like a few right in a row from them, it had to be 10-12 years ago when the stock was probably 85. So yeah, and then those guys came out, and now it's like 150. Those guys came out, and the number then was about a mil and a half if you had your 20, 25 mm-hmm. years there. But it's one of those deals where if you try and take your money, the stock out of there, it's an A share, B share kind of thing. They're not really A share and B share, but the numbers as the employees,
they're restricted.
So when you if you pile them out of there, you don't want to do that if you're still working there because the eyeballs are right on you. Like, what are you not, you know, you lose faith in the company kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So most of the people when they retire and you know, PTI, we have to go help get the stock, and it's an undertaking. I mean, it's not easy to get it out of there. But when you're retired, they can't really bitch at you. But guys would come out, and it's really difficult to manage for people because. You like to protect it, okay, but when you protect it, I like to sell out-of-the-money calls against something to try and pay for the put protection, so you're just not paying for the insurance all the time. You know, and sometimes, but it's also a very trending stock, so when it goes up, even though you don't get much for the calls, it wants to keep going. So it's real tricky, but the thing that's even trickier is most of these people have a basis in the stock of, like, you know, $5 or something.
Yeah.
So if you let any of it get called away... You know, where you don't go, I mean, we're always set up to where if we have to deliver, if somebody exercises early, we'll deliver short. This is more complex than people need to know, but it's also, I think they need to know is we know how to do it right. We deliver short stock and then buy it back, so we don't have the tax event. Mm-hmm. But still, you can't really let the stock go because your basis is, basically, you want to die and give it to your kids whole so they get the new basis. I mean, I'm not giving tax advice on the air, but that's what you're sort of forced to do, Russell. Otherwise, you're paying tax on the whole deal. But anyway, yesterday the stock, they came out with some big, what they're going to do, their 5-year plan or 4-year plan, and the first part of it everybody loved. Stock was up $5 yesterday morning and turned down like $12. So we had puts, you know, for everybody, protected puts. So, but I mean, the stock was down 12. We probably made back 60% of it. You know, which is way better than being down 12, but it's still not.
It's way better than, you know, waking up in the morning, checking your stock, and then checking it in the afternoon and going, holy crap, what happened?
Yeah, and then you're like, well, you know, what the hell?
Instead of holy crap, it's just a crap what happened.
But we're seeing these kind of movements in these stocks on earnings. That I'm going to say the last 15 earnings plays I've looked at, the movements have been 2x straddle, 2.5 times straddle, 1.5. It's like the market has totally lost track on what's going to happen on these earnings days. And it never used to be like that. It was, I mean, the market was usually pretty right about it. And they're not, and they're missing to the upside, which is even weirder.
I don't think that the sell side, and that's where the earnings estimates and all the insights come from. I don't think the sell side puts as much into that as they used to. So, you know, you might not have, and you know what, when I was coming up, you know, in like 1990 or 1995 or whatever, when I was first starting in the investment industry, you know, the big goal was to, you know, work at a bank, be an analyst covering a few sectors, and then maybe get hired away to be the sell side analyst to make the big bucks. That was the big goal. That was kind of what I was hoping would happen, and I ended up going in more of a derivative direction. But now, if you're really smart about a sector or something like that, you just want to go straight to the buy side or to the hedge fund. So you have to wonder about the accuracy around the estimates coming out of the sell side. I mean, there are a lot of really smart people that are doing that, but I don't think that the investment banks, you know, put as much emphasis into, equity research like they used to. I don't think it's as...
Somehow, the variance, and I don't know if it's a, I'm asking the question in a half-assed way. Mm-hmm. Is it a market fabric problem? I mean, some of the ones we did, Micron was a couple weeks ago. I did a spread in there, and it didn't work out so well. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about this straddle was like $8, and it moved 12 mm-hmm. or 15 or something. I mean, they're routinely...
We're routinely seeing what I refer to as outlier moves.
Yes.
And they're happening more frequently. And we go through periods where they seem to happen more frequently than others. But, and also, And this is something that I haven't updated a study on in a long time, but right now, what we were seeing from a lot of companies, not now, we're getting ready to start seeing the end of first quarter numbers, but fourth quarter numbers are often more volatile because those are the numbers that if management is fudging numbers to boost the stock price or anything else, those are the numbers that they're actually attesting to that are correct. And those are the ones that they can go to jail if they're lying about. Quarterly numbers you can fudge a little bit, and you know that if it catches up with you, that it's a really bad thing, but it's not quite the same legal ramifications that you get with your annual numbers. And a lot of the companies that we're seeing right now are their, you know, those are their annual numbers. So there's always more volatility around the fourth quarter announcement on companies, is what I'm trying to say.
Russell, when I was very young in the business, I seem to recall, and I can't, and I should ask some guys that are older than me if I can find somebody. I seem to recall that they would stop trading on a stock, 10 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock in the morning, come out with the earnings, and then they would restart.
Mm-hmm. There were a handful. One of the things I do on my Substack is I talk about the straddles around the most actively traded stock options. I only pay attention to the 50 stocks that have the most active option markets, because those are the ones that everybody cares about anyway. Those numbers have seen a lot more outlier numbers. I'll totally agree with you on that.
Well, I guess
but really the fourth quarter always seems to be, and another part of it is the fourth quarter might be when companies come out and give you, their annual outlooks. And there's, there are companies that report really good numbers, and the stock tanks, and everybody's like, "What the heck's going on?" Well, CEO came up and said, "This next year is going to be a very challenging year for us. So, congratulations on the previous numbers, but you own the stock because what's going to happen in the future?" And I have a hell of a time deciding what's going to happen this coming year in the macro, or in the next 9 months in the macro economy. Everybody's debating how many rate cuts we're going to get. Nobody really knows what's going to happen, geopolitically. There's so many hot spots in the world, it makes you sick to try and keep up with them.
And you've got stuff that's pretty high priced to start with.
Yeah, and you've got in the large cap stocks, and those are the ones that have led us in the most recent market. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, large cap valuations versus small cap valuations are out of control. And small cap valuations aren't that bad. They're kind of in the middle of the road. But the large cap stocks that we all pay a ton of attention to, and the ones that are probably most beholden to the macro economy, which there's a lot. I really do. There are different periods where there just seems to be a lot of uncertainty as to what's getting ready to happen, and it feels like there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's getting ready to happen with the markets. With the world as well. It seems like a lot of dark clouds are.
Well, if we end up getting some
out there,
well, if we end up getting a squeeze up in these 10-year rates, I got to believe the market's in trouble. But we may not. We could very well not have the squeeze up in the 10-year rates. But I guess, Russell, give us a little bit of an education, me as well. In ancient history, when you had the IBM specialist, going back in Dud mm-hmm. Day.
Oh yeah.
The specialist book used to read. I'll pick a number. IBM's 189.39. Say it's 189. Okay. Well, back when you had ace and quarters and a half, he might have an order to sell 10,000 shares at 89 and a quarter. He might have to sell 20,000 at 190. He had this his book of essentially stacked up orders on either side of the market. Mm-hmm. And maybe the broker or two that stood in front of them might have some in their hands as well, but there essentially were standing orders that would even in the OEX pit. I mean, when my options trading $3, a guy might have 400 to sell at four or something. But now he probably put those in the book, so he wouldn't get traded through or something. Same thing with the people in New York. Probably they would give it to the specialist at that point. But there was this standing orders where if somebody wanted to go in and buy, a million shares, he'd have to take out all these orders, and say he had to pay 192 to get a million shares, all the guys who were offered at 189.5 would actually get taken out at 192 as well. So in some ways, it was a much fairer, I think, system. But now, I'm not even sure, where do you even go to standing order? I mean, where is a standing order?
I've done this. It's been about a decade now, it's been like 15 years since I was working on an equity trading desk. And even back then, you know, if we wanted to accumulate a certain number of shares in a stock, we would just piece it out throughout the day. We would hardly ever talk about crossing it with anybody,
right?
Which is what you're talking about.
Well, no, I'm saying, in the OEX, if somebody came in, say a stock was, two and three quarters, 2 7/8, and somebody came in and said, mm-hmm. 7/8 bid, and you'd sell them 25, and then they'll say, I'll pay 3 and buy 400 more there. Well, first I got to sell them at 3, but then probably they'd say, look, make them all at 3. I don't want, 25. Yeah. Why should you get stuck when I was going to pay 3 in the first place? But I'm saying now, I don't even know where the standing orders are, and plus the firms where everybody thinks their brokerage is free, the firms get to trade within the penny, which never used to happen.
Yeah.
So they can actually sell it at 999 ahead of the guy who's offered it even, which means that your order doesn't get anywhere near the same standing that it used to. But so I'm trying to figure out, in this whole mess of things that are different than they used to be, what happens if somebody's earnings disappoint or go higher at essentially 315 when it's after market. It has to take all the problems I see during the day and multiply them up by 10.
Oh, yeah. No, there's not. I mean, the liquidity and volume are not the same thing.
No.
Just because we're doing more and more volume, and in fact, the way that we're doing volume, it's in much smaller pieces. And a lot of it is, algorithmic, where you're a liquidity provider and you basically flip a switch and you're posting markets throughout the day, and your algorithm can pick up, it can sniff out if there's somebody that's consistently buying, if there's somebody that's 10% of the volume and just trying to buy throughout the day and match up with the average prices over the course of the day, those algorithms can pick up on it, and they'll be less aggressive when they're offering shares because they know there's a big buyer out there. I almost feel like the best way to try to accumulate a whole ton of stock is not to use any sort of algorithm, but just have a person randomly put orders in over the course of the day, because there wouldn't be any. It would be more difficult for the liquidity providing algorithms to pick up on there's a buyer out there, because a person doing it, an individual just kind of typing in orders periodically throughout the day and randomly choosing different numbers of shares, etc. I just think the human element of that would probably trick the algos.
Well, it can either.
That's about what you would have to do, but all the computers can really get a feel for what's going on, and if there's big buyers or sellers, even if they're only doing 100 shares at a time, they can pick up on it, and they know to, get out of the way on the upside or get out of the way on the downside based on the order flow make it sound like the computers are people, but the order flow that the computers are seeing throughout the day. So I think that even though we're doing more volume, if you really aggressively need to get something done, it probably is more expensive in this day and age.
Well, you also you have to be careful. You don't, you can't be a chapter in, my ongoing book, No Good Deed Goes Unpunished. I mean, if mm-hmm. we've had, a lot of experience doing this at PTI over the years, and we had some people, I don't know how we ended up with these guys, but we had guys who owned an awful lot of stock in some of the original casino companies. They were the mm-hmm. founders and stuff. And when they went to sell it, you're absolutely right. There was a time when some guy wanted to sell, I don't know how many, 100,000 shares. And over a period of a week, we were able to sell it without disturbing the market at all. Like when there was a bidder came out, we kind of meet the bid. And we ended up getting an average price slightly over where the week started. And we were absolutely heroes. I mean, this guy loved us. And we did that because, you know, we're really good at that. Everybody here has been trading on the trading floor. But you run the risk if the stock's trading 60 and you got to sell, you know, 400,000 shares. And by Wednesday, you've sold 200,000 without disturbing the market, really. And you're doing a really good job. And all of a sudden, you know, somebody comes out and says, the president likes little boys or something. And the thing opens up at 40. Everybody goes, hey, how come you didn't sell it all at 60? Sometimes it's hard to be a hero by doing... So you really have to make it sure clear with the client what you're trying to do. You either want me to get rid of this, so at the end of the day you can say it's gone, or you want me to work it. That's called working an order, for those that don't know. If the answer is working, well, if things stay steady, you can do a way better job for the client. If they don't, of course, the other thing is it could go up too, right? and you can sell the other half higher. But I mean, there's no right or wrong to it. Except I think working it makes more sense. I mean, to me, but
yeah, because I think when you're working it, you're being opportunistic with respect to try to get the best price that you can.
And the market will the people will work with you. We did some won't say the names, but we had a couple of really big firms did some stuff with us, and we did some covered rights where you put the order for the buy the stock and sell the option. We did that. I think we did. What did we do? 100,000 shares, 200,000 shares in one company, and we just left the order in the pit, and we'd get a five lot here and eight lot. Whenever there was some kind of a buyer for an option, the crowd would do 20 with us, 30 with us, instead of jamming it down somebody's throat. You know, they never really had to take a big position against us. They just worked something an eighth better and turned around and gave it to us. It was very fair, I thought.
Yeah.
No, but you know, but every different stock is different. Some work well like that, some don't. And that's that's why everybody thinks they got this all figured out. Russell, well, you know, I guess I should try and take out my own appendix as well, right? You know, I don't think I want
to
do
exactly. I can tell you how to do that, sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
Find where it is, cut a hole, pull it out, and then you've done it.
Cut a hole, hopefully in the right spot. Well. Fish around in there, grab it. Oh, God.
I got it. I did it. Look what I did.
Yeah,
and you did a good job on the last thing you did.
Well, how's the school going? What's everybody learning? We were talking about the bridge collapse, and now all of a sudden the different people that are architects, people are accountants, people are logistics.
They're logistic experts all over the place. Nobody's really been. I've got a couple of students that are really on me about. How can I make money?
Goodness, well, that's gracious. A problem.
Yeah, I know. No, but it's like at a very, very high level. This week is when I, with the graduate classes that I teach, this week is actually when we get into stock analysis, and doing cash flow analysis. And, you know, I get a lot of questions as to, and it's funny because what you were talking about is what I was talking about in class around this one. Where the analyst can't, we're doing cash flow analysis where we try to estimate what a company's going to do cash flow wise in the next 3 to 5 years, and then have maybe just some sort of long term growth rate and value the stock that way. And I had a pretty smart guy say, well, you know, they can't even get the next quarter correct. Why are we going 3 to 5 years out with estimates? And my response is, well, you basically have to use something if you're thinking about analyzing the value of stock, you gotta use something as far as estimates go. And I know that the estimates aren't all that great, but that's the number we got to work with right now. If you can figure out a better way to more accurately predict what the cash flows are going to be from a company over the next few quarters, you know, you can rake in a bundle doing that. And when I say rake in a bundle doing that, everybody gets excited. So that's the part that came up as we just started to talk about stocks. Where do those numbers come from? Well, you know, so-and-so, I forgot who reported some earnings and the stock was way down or way up. It might have been Micron or one of the Nvidia. It was one of the other semiconductor companies. I think it might have been Micron was up like over 6% off their earnings.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because they had a position in there. Yeah.
You know, well, why do they have moves like that? If they're, well, because you know, they do the best that they can, but also, and it's been a long time now, but you know, we used to have a sell-side analyst that would, well, even better, there used to be one or two sell-side analysts that were always kind of like the axe in a different stock. You know, they were the ones that really knew what was going on. And there was a fairly attractive software analyst at one of the big banks that had a really good relationship with Bill Gates. Imagine that. And she was the one that you really listened to when earnings were coming up. And she could, you know, if she said, you know, there are a couple of things to be cautious about here, then you knew that Microsoft might not have the best of quarters or vice versa. You know, she was making pre-earnings comments and saying that it looks like, you know, it looks like things have gone very well this past quarter. We may be we may be a bit conservative on what they're going to earn this next quarter. You would know that they were most likely going to have a bullish, you know, outlook or bullish outlook and bullish reaction to earnings. You don't have those people anymore, and so that's another reason that I think it's not just the appearance of more volatility, just the way that a lot of roles have changed. The way that companies are allowed to communicate with analysts, they're really not supposed to give you any piece of information that is material without giving it to the whole investment world.
Yeah, what was the name of that bill? It was long.
Sarbanes-Oxley.
No, it was before that.
Reg FD for fair disclosure. Yeah.
That was long before.
Sox was a little later than that.
Yeah.
But Reg FD was one of the I think it was because of a lot of the things that happened around the internet bubble. We got Reg FD, and Reg FD basically says if you and I are talking and PTI is a public company and you tell me that 3 weeks before earnings that you've gotten a ton of new clients and their revenues were twice as good as everybody thought they were going to be, and I'm an investment professional that can go trade on that number, on those, that information, it's your duty after making that mistake to put out a press release as quickly as possible.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. And you don't see those. I'm wondering, you know, UPS, I don't know if all of the numbers that came out yesterday were scheduled or not, where they were, you know, giving forward guidance, which is what I think.
Well, yeah, they were out to 2000 and where are we? 24. They were out to 2026, 27, and that's what got her, because I mean, feel free to use this one, Russell. When I was in grad school, you take all these different courses, right? Obviously, you're taking the finance stuff and the investing stuff from you, but there's other stuff, and you get you sort of get it figured out. You never really have it totally figured out, but one day when you realize they're all the same subject, advanced accounting, advanced marketing, advanced management, that's when you sort of get you know. It's when your knowledge kind of finally gets to you, because everything depends on something else. I mean, when you talk about the cash flows, the people say, I mean, you can't. I mean, at Pullman, I'll use a Pullman reference. We could, even though Pullman had never reneged on a contract, it was a big company, relatively in the day. We could not have. When dear departed Ren Robin, she was the treasurer of the passenger unit. Somebody went out and said we're going to bid on a contract that didn't have progress payments, she'd say, "Not here, you're not." we couldn't bid on a $200 million contract that didn't have. When I say progress payments, when some people go out for a contract, and this is for houses, condos, whatever it is, when you go out, there's always differences in the bids. And now this is what your guys, you know, if you want to press upon them. You know, they're not allowed to build houses, but they're above that, I'm sure. But if somebody says you're going to build 200 Amtrak cars or 200 RTA cars or something, and oh, by the way, on the signing of the contract, we're going to give you 10%. When the drawings are approved, we're going to give you 15%. When the first car is laid down, we're giving you another 10%. And so basically, the financing is on them. Now, that's contract one, right? Now, it might be totally on them, we were always ahead, or it might be slightly, they give you enough to keep you going, you're still going to have to borrow, you know, with the $200 and some million contract, at some point your borrowings have to be, they might be 10 or 12 or 15. You might get behind a little bit. Or, but that's a lot different than saying we're not going to give you a nickel until the first car shows up. That's a problem. But if you got all kinds of money, I mean, it's not a problem. Now, Boeing, for instance, when they sell a plane, they get a check for the plane. There's an airstrip near Everett, Washington, where there's a little house or a little hut where people show up with their pilot, and they give. I mean, they're all leased, most of them, but Boeing essentially gets the check for whatever the hell it is, $220 million. Here's your plane. Here's the key, buddy, and off you go. I mean, but Boeing's big enough to do that, you know. But Pullman isn't. I mean, if you're a plumbing company and they say, Russell Rhodes Plumbing Company, we have in the next year we got this big hunk of property, cornfield we just carved up. We're going to build 40 houses. We want you to do all the plumbing. First thing you're going to say is, who's buying the stuff? You know, and do I get progress payments? Now, if you say, well, we're buying the stuff, then the worst you're out is your labor and your people's labor. If you have to cover that, that's not good, but it's better than if you have to buy all the pipe and everything else too, right? But so if you're covering all the labor, well, am I going to get any money along the line? If the answer is no, then you're going to go right to your treasurer and your bank and say, in order for this to happen properly, my cash flow requires $5 million. And the bank goes, not at this place. Not at this place, Joey. You know, or whatever. Or he might say, that's fine. You know, you've more than done this kind of contracts in the past and blah blah blah, and we'll spot you the dough. I mean, cash flow is it's all about the plans. I mean, UPS, they look out 3-4 years. The first thing your students, I think, have to know, Russell, is, okay, 3-4 years now, how many of these brown trucks are we going to need? Less, more? Well, if we need 20% more, we better order them. And oh, by the way, we're going to take delivery, we're going to start paying for them. Then what happens? Are we going out to borrow? Are we going to borrow it? Are we going to sell more stock? Are we going to, and what are we going to do? It's a fascinating subject, and a lot of times,
that's exactly what I teach.
Well, I mean, so that's why you need plans.
And it's funny because a lot of in the corporate space, a lot of people will.
Where'd you go? You went someplace.
Having a technical problem.
There you go. Now you're in. Well, now we got you.
Sorry, am I?
You're still breaking back and forth. It's like you dunked your microphone in like the sink or something. Well, we're just about at. Why don't we go to break anyway, Andrew? And we'll bring it back when we come back. SP Futures up 19. Nasdaq's up 74. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 20 now. We're up, creeping up. We were going back a little bit. Now we're coming back up. NASDAQ Futures up 83. Dow Futures up 143. Big mover in the Dow is Merck up $7, up trading 132.60. Drug company Merck. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 96.5%. FTSE down 28.4%. CAC around up 26.3%. So let's say up over there, except for the FTSE. Over in Asia, somewhat of a mixed bag. Nikkei up 364.9% as the government, you know, continues to push because the yen is reaching a 40-year low. 34-year low. That's long enough. Hang Seng over down 225. It's 1.4%. Hanging over 16,392. Shanghai down another 1.3%. Just back ducked under 3,000. I thought these guys were safely over that, but they're not. 29.93 down 38 points. Yesterday, Dow's down 31. S&P down 14. Nasdaq down 68. And yesterday, during the show, we were saying the market was up more than it was down the day before, and yet we ended up down yesterday. So we'll see if today holds. I think today we might, but we'll see. 10-year note down 1 basis point, 4.22. The Bund down 5, 2.30. Japan down 2.72. We've got oil down 50 cents, 81.12, but low 80s now. Seems like the new range is up a few bucks from where it was. Brent down 59 cents, 85.66. Natural gas down 3 cents, 176. Still really low. RBOB unchanged at 270. Foreign exchange, the U.S. dollar 108 against the yen. Sign of same. British pound, same thing, 126. Maybe the dollar is a little stronger against the pound. Gold, now only up 890. Was up more than that earlier. 2208, trying to stay over 2200. Yesterday was not able to. Came down under it during the day. Silver up a penny, 2462. And we have Bitcoin up 323, back over 70,000, 70,065. Andrew, what do you got for us? A quick traffic weather sports.
It is 7:40 here in Chicago. Going right into sports, we have some opening games to look forward to tomorrow. White Sox are going to be playing the Tigers, and that'll be here in Chicago.
Are you going in the blustery weather?
I will not be, unfortunately. I will be getting some good bed rest.
Oh, God.
Tomorrow, the Cubs will also be playing the Rangers. That'll be over in Texas. But over in Chicago, we are going to have, mostly cloudy skies today. We're going to be stable around 30 to 40 degrees. That's going to be a high of 44, and that's going to hit around 5 p.m. Thankfully, very, very little chance of rain throughout the day. Over in Phoenix, they are currently at 50 degrees, clear skies. They're going to have a high of 76 degrees, and that's going to hit around 6 p.m. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic. Expecting some delays building up on nearly all inbound expressways, a little bit on the outbound Kennedy and Eisenhower as well. It looks like the earlier accident on that Eisenhower exit has cleared up, so things are looking decently better around there, but still expect some decent delays if you're on the outbound near about Harrison Street. Earlier it was saying delays of about up to 30 minutes. Looks like that's all I got, so back to you.
We got Russell back? You're back.
Died on me. And I'm actually in Phoenix right now.
Really? Hey, good for you.
Yeah, I go all over the place. So, yeah, and I'm here with my junior and high school daughter and my wife for my junior spring break, staying at my in-law's house. And my poor you know, my poor daughter has not been able to really lay out in the sun at all, and today's going to be the first day that she can actually do that.
How far away are you from Tempe?
I'm a pretty good height. We're actually almost where the, you know, just before the hills and the mountains and, you know, John McCain's old house built up on the side of the mountain. We're pretty far north.
Oh, so you're not by Cave Creek or anything like that, are you?
Exactly where I am.
Did you go to the bar, Horny Toad or the Satisfied Frog?
No, I did not go to the bar. I don't go to the bars anymore. With my 19-year-old.
Well, those are classic places because the guy, mm-hmm. he owned the Horny Toad, right? And then when he got divorced, the wife opened the Satisfied Frog across the street with all the money or something?
You got to like that.
Yeah. Well, if you make it down to Tempe and showing the daughter, mm-hmm. she probably has no interest in Arizona State, but it's a beautiful campus.
No, I know it is. I know it absolutely is. We've talked about. Yeah, I'm in Indiana, and I think they're probably. I'm going to be talking about cash flows and getting all excited like I do when I teach, and I'm probably going to drop dead at that very moment teaching at 80 or so because
that's okay.
And teaching at 80 at Indiana because it's just such a great place to work. You know, we always talk about we'll be in a different city, and you know, I know that Arizona State has a wonderful campus, and the weather's much better than it is in Indiana. But you always take a bit of risk if you ever change your job, and it's not, you know, you change your job and make some more money, that's great. But if you leave a place where you just love everybody you work with,
I'm not saying
all of a sudden,
leave it. I'm just saying that.
You know, Arizona, we always talk about, well, you know, I could teach here and we could live here and stuff like that. But the actual ever coming true is probably 0.01, you know, 0.1%, which would involve them kicking me out the door at Indiana.
Well, what I was was mentioning had nothing to do with education. It had to do with there's a place right near the center of campus called the Chuck mm-hmm. Box. And it's this little hamburger place. It's been there forever.
Yeah.
You've been there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a long time. But, yeah, I've been over there. Yeah.
We were embarrassed in there. The first time we go in there, these guys have this big, huge charcoal kind of grill it's on flywheels. So they got so many burgers on there, they start to burn. They can raise the grill up out of the way. So we go in there, and they had the one, and then there's the big one? Anyway, so we get in line. This is back when, you know, we'd played handball all morning or something, so I was pretty hungry. So we end up getting the big one and thinking we were pretty cool. What do you suppose happens? This guy embarrasses the hell out of us. He comes up behind us and he goes, "Give me the great big one." And I look at my buddy and I go, "Wait a minute. Well, there's a great big one. What are we doing? What are we doing with the big one? A couple of schlumps." So of course we had to order the great big one as well. I think the regular one's a quarter pound. The big one's a half pound. The great big one's 3/4 pound. God, is it good! And then they got the huge.
Yeah.
They got the massive deli bar where you can put every kind of condiment on it you want. That thing was disgusting. God, was it good. And they serve you beers in frozen mason jars.
I do recall that.
Yeah.
That's actually the part that I remembered about there. We had this thing that we would do when we would travel around with the kids where we would visit college campuses just to, I don't know, try to get that in their mindset with respect to what they're going to be doing next after they finish school. And so we would, and part of it was also I was doing my PhD and trying to figure out where I might end up as well. But, you know, maybe I was justifying dragging my kids around college campuses, saying it was good for them when it was actually what I wanted to do. But, we ate there with the kids a million years ago.
I think every college campus is so different in terms
of
some
are. That's one of the fun parts, too.
Well, ASU has got to be. It was the biggest university. I don't remember, maybe now it's second to Central Florida or something, but the campus is not that big. I mean, nobody lives there. Mm-hmm. It's a massive commuter kind of school.
It is. I think if you go to college and you live on campus and all that stuff, University of Arizona is where you go. But I think Arizona State's very much like you just described it. But it's still, you know, they're commuter schools that. You don't really have much of a great college life going to, and then there's commuter schools that you can kind of have the best of both worlds, and I think Arizona State's one of those.
Well, your daughter is at George Washington, right?
Yes, she is.
And I remember her being on the air.
See her this,
We're going to see her this weekend, and the little rebel, she, you know, she's a freshman in college, and she decided to convert to Catholicism. And she's, we're going through that whole process with her this coming weekend over in D.C. Can you believe that?
Well, she rebelled. That's my religion, and good for her. Tell her I congratulate her.
I will tell her that you said that we brought that up. But
she brought up the point where that university, you're supposed to be a citizen of Washington that just happens to be a George Washington, where Georgetown is more of an enclosed campus. There's differences in all these things. Hey, can you do I'm just seeing this headline here. What is, you know, I don't know much about this big debate going back and forth with TikTok. Would that affect a lot of your students if all of a sudden it was just gone?
You know what? We should ban TikTok. That's all. The Chinese government does not have any good intentions towards the United States of America.
No.
And they also, there are rules in place. If you are a Chinese company, first off, if you're a Chinese company, the government's going to own part of you. That's just the way that it works. You know, when they first started having what we would think of as banks, it was different ministries that were creating banks, you know, different units of the government that are doing that. And the Chinese government owns TikTok. I'm not saying that they're using it to, you know, monitor all of our moves right now, but there is too much of a possibility of really who is our, you know, everybody focuses on Putin, but you don't want to focus in on, you know, the loudmouth bully who you can just push down into the mud and just walk away. You want to focus on the bully that's got a lot of might behind him, and the quiet one that you don't want to entirely piss off. And that's the way I think about China right now. They have no good intentions toward us. They never have. You know, let's just call it what it is. You know, they let Tesla move into China. They figure out how to make their own electric cars by knocking off Tesla. And now they've got all kinds of restrictions on Tesla, you know, building cars and selling cars in China. Same thing with Apple. Apple's shipments are down. I saw Apple's shipments to China, or sales in China, are down like by a third. Well, they figured out how to make smartphones, and they don't really need Apple anymore over there. So, you know, and then TikTok is a way that they, you know, they can get into our information. It's bad enough, it's bad enough how often I get a little notification that my, you know, some of my information has been leaked on a website somewhere. I don't have TikTok. If I had TikTok, I think they would have direct access to a lot of my information. So and then also, if they want to try to alter the hearts and minds of people in the United States, TikTok gives them the ability to do that. It's just giving.
Russell, how do you?
You know what? They're giving a communist government too much potential access to our information.
Why? How do you? What was the old line?
You ban the freaking thing.
Okay, but the old line is, you know, a capitalist would be happy to sell you the rope with which you used to hang him. I mean, how do you back up from the fact that, you know, I'll go back to the story I heard long before I met you. My mother's cousin, back, he's been dead forever. He was a mining engineer at Ohio State. By the way, happened to be a minor league baseball player as well. Big, tough Italian guy. He was a mining engineer. His group went over there. I don't know if the name of the company, but he was out of Columbus. They did some stuff there. Pretty close after the ping pong diplomacy, and they were probably one of the top or the first 10 firms there. And so this Chinese dude says to him, "How about we buy one of every one of your machines?" My cousin goes, "Take me back to the plane. We're not doing that."
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, they would visit us at the exchange, and all they ever wanted to see was our ops center.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They'd bring it up over and we would take. We had to take their phones away.
Well, the people who
and we would take them on. This is even better. We would take them on. This one would make your head explode. We would take them on the trading floor, and they would pull out their smartphone and stick their phone between a trader and his screen and take a picture of his screen.
Oh, they had no shame.
Yeah.
You know, and the people I'm talking about.
I actually had to physically restrain a guy from trying to do that. Trying to run into the S&P pit and do it.
You know the people I'm talking about. We were
like a bouncer. I grabbed him and Luckily, he was smaller than I was. I mean, I probably could have gotten charged with assault.
Well, most of the Chinese dudes are smaller than you.
Yeah.
Except Yao Ming. But you know.
But the thing back to the TikTok thing, we should just ban them. I started to drop an F-bomb on the radio, and I'm glad I stopped myself there. We should just ban it. Just period. You know, China, they, you know, Facebook, Google, everybody is not allowed to have, you know, open access like we have for their. They do it to us. Why shouldn't we do it to them?
I mean, the problem is a lot of our people don't care, but we had a group, you know what I'm talking about. They were hooked up with Chinese. When I say hooked up with the Chinese, they were loosely affiliated with PTI on the future side. This is a long time ago. And they did some work for the U.S. government versus the Chinese government. And even though, you know, there might be issues between the governments, these agencies work with each other all the time. So the agriculture department here and the agriculture department there in China would work, and I don't know what we ever learned from them, but they sent a
group. I was going to say, why? What is the benefit to us?
Well, I mean, we're fighting with Russia, and we just sent one of our guys up in their spacecraft to the space station. I mean, it's, you know.
Well, that's a little bit. What benefit does Russia get out of that other than a check?
Well, but I'm. We had a group of eight people here for a week, right?
Yeah.
And these people, this couple, is paid by the U.S. Department of Agriculture to have lectures. And there have been lectures in our PTI, a pretty big lecture room here. Well, you're right. The cameras are out the whole time. So we end up taking them to an ethanol facility in Freeport. The first thing the guy says is, leave all your phones in this room. Nobody takes any pictures. Well, they almost said, well, we don't even want to be here. The best was the guy giving the lectures, I'll call him Chris, he goes to the men's room, somebody runs up and sticks a thumb drive in the back of his computer to steal everything in the computer, and Chris comes out and he sees it, he goes, you know, we don't do that in America. The guy had no idea why he was pissed off.
He knew why he was pissed off.
He's just like, well, what do you mean? We do that.
But, you know, that Saturday morning wrestling, I didn't have a chain in my trunks, look on their face, BS. They know exactly what they're doing. It's kind of funny. I almost feel like I hold back on my opinion about what's going on in this relationship between China and the U.S. out of a bit of fear.
Well, sure.
And I feel like a freak, and I feel like a freaking hypocrite by not you know, outright saying what I think's going on. But there are no good intentions. And here's where the benefit would have been with us. And I understand going this route. There was a belief that if we could, you know, if we could really help them get capitalism going over there, that the government would become less restrictive and they would become more of an open society. And if anything, it's gone in the other direction because as the capitalism starts to open up things, open up, and you've got, you know, people like Jack Ma who can say something minorly critical of the financial system in China because it was all being, you know, it was being tightly controlled by the government. He wanted to start that Ant Financial, which was, you know, kind of like a shadow banking type thing where people could do transactions. But the government wasn't going to be able to be everything that everybody was doing all the time. And next thing you know, Jack Ma gets disappeared. You know, he comes back out. He's not nearly as powerful as he used to be. Their society is not going to open up if we help them become better, you know, better in the capitalism end of things. They just want to sell us as much crap as they possibly want and spread what they call their version of, I think it's communism with Chinese characteristics, which is basically communism where you say that, you know, businesses are free to operate, et cetera, but that's not true because the government owns part of, and, you know, at TikTok in China, the Chinese Communist Party has an office, it has people that are with the party embedded in their headquarters. They're monitoring.
Well, we're doing
going
a,
on.
You could make the now, argument we're doing the same thing here through regulation, regulating some people, not others.
Well, to a certain point, but they're not. You know, if the CEO of a company comes out, you know, if the CEO of a company is a staunch conservative, or you like the Koch brothers, they're very conservative. They back conservative causes and candidates forever. They haven't been disappeared and put out of business.
No.
So,
well, but what you're talking about, Russell, this is a little bit before, you know, it's not like you're 25, you're not. But this is when this kind of all started. You sound like Milton Friedman Jr. Those guys from that era, the PhD economist, the Nobel Prize winning economist, they have the same mistake that all of us have the same problem. And Lou has been smacking me upside the head with it ever since he's been on the show, and I've learned from him. You can't judge everybody by yourself and assume everybody's going to react the same way. I mean, if you're a moral person, which I think you are, you can't assume other people are going to react the same way you do to a situation where the choice is moral or immoral. And Milton Friedman and those guys were absolutely convinced because of the, you can go the religious route, since you brought it up, the Judeo-Christian tradition or the British U.S. Government tradition, maybe going back to the Greek democracies, and for a while Rome was a democracy. You can go back those ways. And Milton Friedman and the people of the time, and there's still people around like that, and maybe some places they might be wrong or might not be wrong. They were convinced that if you could somehow interject economic freedom, that political freedom would follow, and the whatever you want to call them, the totalitarian regimes would fail because people would see from the economic side how dumb that is as a way of government. Now, that hasn't worked there, and I think to a lot of extent you could get people here to say ours is becoming a lot less democratic than it used to be, rather than the other way.
We've got a choice between a couple of guys.
Yeah.
Neither of which most people are happy about. I would love to know if there are any pollsters out there that say, are you voting for this guy or are you voting against the other guy?
Oh, without a doubt.
Right? And there, I think there's a lot of, if you're going to vote for one guy, you're really, if I were going to vote for, I'm going to vote for Libertarian most likely, or maybe not even.
By the way, is RFK running on the Libertarian ticket? Or is he running independently?
No, he's under his own ticket.
Okay.
And I just don't know enough about him to, I think I would rather just vote for Libertarian just to try and get that party over 5% nationally.
Well, he came out the other day and said,
the problem is when there's such a contentious situation where, you don't want the other, where you want to vote against the other guy, well, you want to make sure that other guy doesn't get elected. And if you vote for the third party candidate, it's possible that you're helping the person get elected that you don't want to get elected.
Well, the things that one of the stuff that bothers me, I think maybe you as well, is you see the cross currents. Last week, Audrey tells me that now in the Orland Mall, any of the food places in there, you can't use cash. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, RFK comes out the other day and said, are we stupid? Don't you realize that if everything becomes with no cash, you lose almost all your independence? There's nothing you can do that people don't know about, and yet, I don't think that either Trump or Biden is behind that, and just about everybody in America, if you really quiz them, maybe after a couple of cocktails or some of the funny cigarettes or something, I think everybody believes that there's people running the show that we don't know about. I know I do. I wonder who the hell they are. It's not the Cabots and the Lodges, but this drive towards no cash, meaning that if you and I bet $10 on the Bulls tomorrow or tonight or whatever they're playing,
and then I have to,
somebody has to know about it. Nobody should want that. And yet, young people are so convinced that if it's convenient, they don't care. That nobody's really watching them. That these hard fought freedoms aren't really worth it. That's just the way it always will be. They're out of their friggin' mind. It's not all the way. It is very rare in the history of humanity that anything's like that, where you could have some freedom.
Yeah, and I'm anything of a fan of the guy, but you got to admit, the way the court system's being used against Trump right now, there's got to be some unfairness to this.
I cannot stand the man.
Yeah. I know I can't stand the man, but
I'll tell you what, this is heinous what's going on against him.
The woman that went after him for the sexual assault thing, they got a nice ruling. My understanding is he kind of got around back in the day.
He's one of the most disgusting. I mean, the more you read about him, more I know about him. But it does nobody, even him, should have should be able to get an $80 million legal bill from the government just because they charge you at every place. Every district attorney who wants to make a name for him or herself just charges the guy. I mean, and he's got to defend himself. What the hell, over? And if it turns out they're totally wrong, nothing comes down on them ever. Nobody ever pays anybody's legal bills from the government side. This is crazy. This is almost like China Lite.
Well, and it's Putin's biggest critic, who really would just run against him. They killed him in jail.
Yeah,
a few weeks ago. Yeah, I understand that there is a difference between that, but on the other side of it, weaponizing your power in government against the people that are critical of you. That's the same thing that's happening to Trump right now.
Well, in terms of the sexual assault stuff, everybody knows the man. He's been free with his hands forever. Okay, but nobody knows the particulars. Yeah. I don't get this part. I'd love your opinion on this one. Why all of a sudden does the state of New York have to defend somebody's appraisals on bank stuff from 20 years ago? Like, banks don't know this crap. We need to defend the banks against somebody. I mean, what is that all about? And who gets the what if he pays? What if he pays the $600 million? Who gets it? The banks or the state of New York? How do they? Why? What do they deserve it for?
I assume it goes to the state of New York.
How does that work?
Disgust me even more. I would love it if they said, I like it when professional athletes get fined and the money and they somehow the money ends up at a charity or something like that. That's basically lack of a better way to put it. You could think of it as government theft of his money.
Well, I would, if my name was in the ring.
It's hard to feel sorry for the guy. But
you know what?
If you took who the individual is out, and you just if you wrote a little fiction story about Joe Blow and the government starts doing all these things to them because they don't like their politics, it would get your blood boiling.
Like I said, I don't like them. This is crazy. I didn't like Blagojevich. I can't believe what happened to him. All his money.
Same thing. Yeah. He just outside of the state, or if you're not really paying attention, all he really did was piss off the establishment.
Right. That's all he did.
He did all the same kind of.
But that Citigroup and Chase or whatever those people are, J.P. Morgan, the day they need the state of New York to protect them from me. I mean, come on. I don't even know how many. Did he renege on any of these loans? I don't think he did. Did he? I don't even know.
Who knows? I'm sure he did. He always paid the bare minimum. We've talked about this before that he would have the reputation of not playing flyers. And I don't know if you saw where they were trying to get a. So he has sold this Truth Social thing, and I do think he's got a big windfall coming in the next few months. And they went around to investment banks to basically get a front on the loan to pay his legal thing. To get a loan against this windfall that's going to come in 6 months, and none of the investment banks would help him out with it.
Well, he's talking Bibles.
They offered a 15% return if they would help him. They were willing to pay 15% interest.
Well, if somebody
against an asset that is pretty certain.
I would say that if you, we got a dash here, Russell, but if you and I got written in as the next president, first thing I would do is pardon the guy on all these crap things. Now the sexual assault stuff, he's guilty of that. I'm not going to worry that he has to face, but this other stuff, I'd pardon him on all that stuff.
Yeah, I would. I would actually do it for both of them, and let's just try to move forward.
Well, yeah, I mean the idea that somebody grabbed my butt 20 years ago. I mean, okay, it's 20 years ago, but then again, some people think they're the only one, and when other people speak out, they say, "Hey, did it to me too." So you don't know which is happening, really.
Right. But beyond all that, just the full power of the government going after a single guy like that, and the problem is he's so vengeful when he gets reelected. And I'm afraid, I think he is going to get reelected. He's going to turn right around and do the same, you know, and do the same thing.
Which is not what you want. Look. Hey, how did you manage to land out in spring training the day?
You want to put an end to this, then you can't.
How did you land in spring training the day after spring training ends?
You know what? I went to a Sox game the other day.
Oh, cool. Buddy, we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy yourself. It's not as nice down there, the weather, as it normally is.
It has not been a nice. It is. I feel bad for my kid. I really do. So.
All right, well, keep her out of the skin cancer. You know, it's not that so bad.
There's a silver lining to everything.
Yes.
She can't go out there and lay out, so she's not going to have skin cancer in 50 years.
S&P Futures up 24, NASDAQ Futures up 101. Talk to you next week.
All right, see ya.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's all, folks.